The Dirty Dozen, Ireland's motorsport legends in conversation with John Kenny. This week, Robert Dunlop.
Dunlop having his first short circuit race since his dreadful crash in the Iron Man in 1994, which almost curtailed his career and, dare I say, almost curtailed his life. It really was a remarkable fight back for Dunlop. He leads.
Robert Dunlop racing at Bishop's Court in his first race back since a return to racing following an accident which almost cost him his life on the Isle of Man. Our series of programmes would have liked to have interviewed Joey Dunlop, but he wasn't around when the concept was first mooted. Any interview would have been difficult, however, as he wasn't the most forthcoming, unlike his brother Robert, himself a fine bike rider, multiple Irish champion and TT winner. I met Robert Dunlop at a British Superbike round at Mondello Park, where he was team boss to his two sons racing in the 125 series, and he told me of his background.
Yeah, well, John, you know, we come from a very humble background. My father was a mechanic all his life. Sadly, not with us anymore. And my mum just came from a farming background. And my dad, you know, had an old Norton to go to his work on. But racing didn't really come on the scene until my sister Helen, who's the oldest girl in the family, met the late Mervyn Robinson. And him and Joey used to work in Ballymoney in the town, so they had Ariel Arrow bikes apiece. And of course, they used to race in and out from work, you know. And there was a great S bend down just over a wee railway line down the road from us, and we used to go down there about 5 o'clock and wait for them coming. It was a great spectacle to watch the two of them coming out round. So, and that's what got Joey involved in the racing, and then obviously I started because of Joey, basically.
Perhaps a lot of people don't know is the fact that you're a twin. Your sister Margaret is your twin.
Yeah, that's right. We're the youngest of the family. Margaret's a hairdresser, so she cuts my hair for me from time to time, free of charge, which is good.
Well, you went to school in Ballymoney, and also, you know, Joey, as you mentioned as well, and your brother Jim. All involved in motorbikes, and you got together with Mervyn Robinson, as you mentioned, and Frank Kennedy. They were known as the Armoy Armada, wasn't it?
That's correct, yeah. It's interesting that, you know, whenever I was a young boy growing up, I wanted to be Tarzan, but it didn't work out that way. But yeah, I mean, well, there was Joey and Jim, Mervyn Robinson and Frank Kennedy, who made up the Armoy Armada, and I think it was a bit of a Jamara Destroyers came from County Down, and we're from North Antrim, which is, in financial terms, quite a lot further down the scale, you know, and it was always a great achievement, you know, to beat fellows who had plenty of money, you know, so that was, I think that was the drive that we had, or that they had, and certainly the drive I had anyway, was, you know.
But you were younger than, obviously, than Joey and the other boys. I mean, were you looking up to them?
Yeah, of course, but, I mean, as I said before, I wasn't really interested in bike racing, you know, racing myself. But when I became 17, I got a bike just, you know, to go in and out to my work on, and it was a 250 Suzuki, an AM Suzuki, quite an old bike. And I fell off it a few times on the road, you know, just riding too hard, and I suppose trying to be somebody I wasn't really. And then my brother Joe said to me one day, look, you know, because I was breaking my mum's heart, I really was. Every time I went out on it, you know, she was really worried by the time I got back. So Joey said to me one day, he says, Robert, you'd be better out in the track. And I says, well, I don't have a bike. He says, I've got an old one lying in the garage, you can have that. And I says, right, well, that's all right. I went and I got a racing licence, and it was the very last meeting of the season up at Achadui in County Derry. And Joey landed up with it about 7 o'clock in the morning before the race. And I remember pushing it up and down the avenue where we used to live, trying to get it started. And they were quite difficult, you know. But I went to Achadui and I pushed it the full length of the straight. But I eventually got it started and got on it. And then that was, I just got the bug, you know, really the sensation of the G-forces when you open the throttle, you know, was really give us a buzz. And I sold my road bike then to finance my racing, and I never had one since.
That was obviously a couple of years after Joey had started his racing career. There was a story going around that when he went out for the first time, that he actually took an ivy leaf and traced around it on the helmet and you coloured it in before he went racing.
That's right. You done your homework, John, yeah? I did, yeah. I remember painting Joey's helmet, his first helmet. With an ivy leaf, yeah. I suppose it was based on Bill Ivy, actually, at that time. But then, obviously, you know, he went on to wearing a yellow helmet and then that stuck with him.
When you started racing in Accadoe, was that, there's a couple of years I've seen, was it 78 or 81? And just clear up that confusion, was it 78 you started racing?
Yeah, 1978. I was 17 years age at that time. Forged my age to get the license, and because you weren't allowed to race at that time until you were 18, so that was it.
Plenty of stories going around Ireland about people forging signatures and birth certs to go racing. But, I mean, obviously you said you pushed the whole length of the strength to get the bike racing, and then you really got into it. I mean, was it something that you said, OK, listen, I know the other lads are doing it, now I'd like to do it myself?
Well, not really. You know, I just got a bug for it, really, John. And, you know, I'm a determined fella anyway, you know, and once I set my mind on something, you know, I usually succeed. So, obviously, I had not my wildest dreams, I'd ever think, you know, I would won 14 Northwest 200s. I mean, never thought I'd even won one of them.
Obviously, you're totally different to, I mean, obviously the rest of your family, but Joey in particular, yourself and Joey were the two big names to come out from the Dunlop family. He was more shy, more introverted, did less talking on the bike. You were able to do both. I mean, you were two completely different characters. Did you feel perhaps a little bit overshadowed by him at times, though?
Oh, obviously at the start. I mean, in fact, I was embarrassed at times, John, because, you know, Joey and I were maybe racing in the same race together. You know, some of the road races somewhere. And we used to go into the pubs and they would say, well, how'd you get on? Or, you know, and I think it was just out of basically being polite, you know, because Joey had maybe won three races and I had finished 18th or 20th, you know, and I was a bit embarrassed, you know, but I never lost sight of, you know, what I could achieve. And in fairness, I wasn't on as good a machinery, but probably even I would have, you know, I wouldn't have been much further up anyway, but and I learned, I never forgot, you know.
Between 78 and around beginning of 80s, 83, around that time, before your first big win, the Manx GP newcomers race in 83, how much racing did you do in those 4 or 5 years?
Well, I suppose I raced, you know, pretty much every race I could get. I had an old 250 Yamaha that a few business people from Ballymoney all clubbed up and bought it off Joey for £600, the bike that he lent me, and they bought it for the following season for me. Incidentally, I still have it. I got it restored there recently, so it's a nice bit of nostalgia.
And what do you remember of that first Manx newcomers race win?
At that particular time, you know, I was still riding old Sealy bikes, and Jim and Joey, they were all on cantilever bikes, which was the newer suspension-type Yamahas. And Jim had fell off at Faugheen in Southern Ireland, and he'd broke his pelvis, and he was out for most of the season, and it came round near September time, and I says to Jim, you know, can I ride your bike, you know, instead of my old one, you know? And he says, well, yeah, phone up John Ray it was at that time, because it was always Martin that sponsored Jim, but it was actually John that owned that bike. And I phoned John, and he says, yeah, he says, you know, I didn't buy it to sit in the garage. He says, you can have it, you know, but you got to look after yourself. And my father and I went over, obviously a shoestring budget. John just gave us the bike, that was it. And I can remember, I couldn't get over 100 mile an hour in practice. And, you know, that was my goal, to try and get over that there. And my dad says, take your time, it'll come. And went out in the race and did 105 with Dunlop tyres.
What did you think to the Isle of Man itself? I mean, I know in 84 you finished 14th on a Yamaha. And it's unlike, I mean, you mentioned the Northwest 200s there, where you've won 14 of them. And that's, they're basically racing against each other, where the Isle of Man is racing against time. So it's a different kind of bike race that you're doing. It's a different kind of mindset, I suppose, as well. And the circuit is just so long. I mean, those who've never ridden it can probably never know and quite understand just how difficult a circuit the Isle of Man is.
Well, the Isle of Man TT was really my least favourite race of all time. I don't like it at all. But, you know, it was part of the calendar, and there was obviously, you know, a lot of media coverage there and money to be won as well. And I mean, I did it for 11, so I suppose I had to go there. And Joey didn't really like mixing it with other riders, you know. He liked to be if he was out, if he got off to a good start and out in the front, nobody caught him, you know. But I don't think he really liked the pushing and shoving and the cutting across each other's wheels, you know. Joey didn't like that there.
Did you?
I didn't mind it. I didn't mind, actually, because it only made me more aggressive, you know, when somebody did something on me that I didn't really think was fair. Then it just made me more determined to beat them, so making a stick for their own back, basically.
There was a moment in 1985, and this goes down in the folklores of history for the Dunlops and a lot of your friends, when you headed in May 1985 for the Isle of Man on a fishing boat. Now, what I've read is that the boat headed out and lo and behold, Brian Reid's bike turns up, mm-hmm. and you had to turn back for it. Put the bike on board, and by that time, the tide had turned. Just take us on from there.
Yeah, the tide had turned, sure, yeah, and we headed out of the loch. But I mean, I was up top on deck as well, and, you know, I was talking to the captain, you know, for I would have an interest in pretty much, you know, everything, but maybe not much knowledge. But, you know, I like to know how things is going, and I was watching the boat going through the water, and I said to him, what speed are we doing? He says, we're actually going back, because the tide was coming in so fast, and it's a treacherous bit of water anyway. But no matter, by this time, you know, it got dark about 12 o'clock, and we went down below, and Joey, he's put the pan on. He was going to cook some pork chops or something like that there. But of course, we were having a beer or two as well. But I was feeling a bit sick because it was a bit choppy, and I says, Joey, I'm going to lie down. He says, aye. Lie near the middle of the boat and you'll not feel the same. So I lay down, but I wasn't down that long until... Well, there was all these big thuds anyway, because you're right down the hull, you know, breaking the water, yeah, big thuds. But there's this one that was a bit heavier than most, but I was half sleeping anyway and I didn't... But Joey obviously realised that there was a bit more than just, you know, a heavy wave. And he nipped upstairs, and the next thing, he comes down through the wee hatch and says, right, boys, everybody up. And I, whenever he said that, I knew by his face and the tone of his voice that there was something wrong. And I remember as well, there was no life jackets on the boat. And we at that particular year, there was a fuel strike. And we were carrying aeroplane fuel over with us in drums. And Joey said, empty the drums out, lads. It's something to float with, you know. And Joey's very calm about it, very calculated. And a great to have there. That particular time now, I must say. Luckily enough now, we didn't have to. We got into the life, you know, we life dinghies and got towed home, you know, the lifeboat came out for us. But it was, you know, a lot of people ask me, do you ever get scared on a bike? But I never have been, you know. I've got fright, sure, my heart, you know, when you do something, you know, run a bit wide and turns and think you're going to hit the dike, but it's just over in a split second. But that particular night now, I was afraid. Really was.
A lot of expensive bikes ended up at the bottom of the sea as well, but you got them back, didn't you?
Yeah, well, funny, Joey didn't have any bikes on the boat. He only had an old trials bike that he was going to ride in the Isle of Man, you know, from his digs down to the garage. But I had my two racing bikes on it, all I had, and my leathers and helmet, everything I had. And, you know, wee boxes that I had inherited from Joey and Jim, with jets and wee things that you take for granted, all gone. I rode one of the bikes in the Isle of Man, 250, and I borrowed a 350, but I didn't do very well. I broke down the 250, actually.
Jimmy Walker has described you as perhaps the best 125 rider this country has ever produced, and Jimmy wrote Joey's book called Just Joey. And I mean, how do you take that kind of praise on board? Because I mean, obviously, having won so many TTs on the 125, you obviously is the bike that you like. Did you prefer to like ride the smaller bikes more than the senior bikes?
No, it wasn't a matter of liking it. It's just I think my stature suited the smaller bikes better than the big bikes. Yeah, I think in the big bikes, I mean, I struggled whenever I rode the Norton bike a lot with wheel span, and it was basically just because I wasn't heavy enough to hold the bike, that, you know, to get enough grip on the back tire. In the smaller bikes, then, obviously my weight and size was an advantage. So that was all. I mean, I enjoyed all the bikes I rode. I really missed, after my 94 TT crash, I really missed riding big bikes. But, you know, it was circumstances.
Now, the change to Norton, I suppose, brought you more into public focus, and purely because of the fact that the bike was black. You were wearing black overalls as well, and a good superbike double as well in 1990 up with the Northwest 200, beating the likes of Carl Fogarty and Steve Hislop as well. So you're really starting to make a mark now as well. I mean, it's the Dunlops, as distinct from just the Dunlop.
Well, in fairness, the Norton bike was a very fast machine. So, you know, I was confident before I even got on it. But it did raise my profile, and I think that it's because it's a superbike, and you wouldn't get the same recognition by riding a 125. And that's one of the reasons I didn't go 125 racing, like as in GP racing. One, finances. I come from North Antrim. I didn't know enough people. You know, like Jeremy knew people to get him into Grand Prix who could finance him. I didn't, and not very well educated in that field anyway. So, you know, I really would have struggled to get finances together to go to Grand Prix. I could do it now, but it's too late.
Would you have preferred to have done that, to do the circuit racing rather than the road racing?
Not really. I didn't mind. I suppose I'm one of the very few people that could do the both. In 1991, I asked them, would they give me a British Superbike ride? And Barry Simmons, who was the team manager at that time, in fact, Joey's team manager all through his Honda days, he said, well, you're a road racer, you can't ride short circuits, so we can't give you a ride at the British Championships. And that's one of the reasons I went in 1991 with my 125 and won the British Championship, won every round and broke the lap records. And then I went back to him in 92 again and said, will you give me a ride in the British Championships in 1992? Knowing full well that they couldn't say, well, you're only a road racer, you can't ride circuits. And I got a ride then.
I've talked to Martin Donnelly in the past about his major crash in the Lotus in 1990 at the Spanish Grand Prix in Jerez in practice. You had a monster as well in 94 on the Isle of Man. Tell us about that day. Do you remember anything about it?
Well, yeah, I remember about it, sure, yeah. I mean, I was riding an RC45 Honda, and it's ironic that Bob McMillan once told my wife, to get him off them Nortons, he's going to get killed on them. You know, it's ironic that it was a Honda that I was riding when I prematurely finished my career, you know, on big bikes. But no matter, I mean, I remember that day I was in third place in the race. I wasn't going to get any further up. I was just riding around because it's quite physical, you know, and I was small in stature, and it was hard work for me, the Isle of Man TT, I must say, in comparison to any of the rest of them because of the mileage, you know, and the nature of the circuit as well. But I just, you know, I remember going over Balaff Bridge and going round the left turn when I was opening up the throttle as well. And I changed into about third gear. I just remember the bike end going round and me going over the top of the tank of the bike. I didn't know. I thought the suspension had collapsed. But I mean, I knew I was falling off, but I don't remember hitting the wall or there was no pain or anything, even though I was conscious. But your body seems to take over like a pain-killing thing by its own. But I remember before I went into surgery, I was aware of the media that would be involved in it. And I remember saying to my mechanic, Liam, check the back suspension. Something's wrong with the back end of the... Something happened to the back end of the bike. Check the suspension. Because I rode at the Bald Or 24-hour race, and a bolt broke in the back suspension of an RC30 Honda with me. And it sat down the same thing. But I stayed on it. But it just sat down. So I was thinking maybe a bolt was broke or something. But then it emerged that it was the back wheel.
And you were out of racing for a long, long time. I mean, there was talk that, you know, perhaps you wouldn't come back at all. But you were obviously very determined, even though you're out for a couple of years. I mean, it took a lot of courage from your point of view and recuperation as well.
Well, what broke my leg and my arm and things was the same thing that motivated me to get fat again, if you know what I mean. You know, even though that I was damaged badly by motorcycle racing, it was motorcycle racing that made me determined to get my leg fixed, get better again, get my arm and get on a bike again. And it was hard now. There was a lot of effort in it. And a great girl from Monaghan, my physio, Fiona Gilliland. She really worked wonders, and I could see the effort that she was putting in.
And in 98, you actually won the TT as well. I mean, you actually had to give up the superbikes, I suppose, really, because they were just too heavy, and concentrate on the 125s. And you won in 98 on the Isle of Man after that big crash in 94.
Yeah, but, I mean, it wasn't a psychological barrier I had to get over to win the Isle of Man again. So, obviously, I welcomed it. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, I went there. I was determined, you know. And it's funny, Joey said to one of the lads, he says, I think Robert's going to win. And they said, well, why? Because, I mean, there's other lads out there, yourself, and there's... I just know by the way he even walks about the paddock. You know, he must have seen the confidence brimming out of me, you know. And I was confident, you know. I knew I was going to be hard to beat, so...
There's one subject, I suppose, that everybody's going to talk about when we're talking to anybody from the Dunlop family is obviously Joey's death back in the year 2000. It shocked the racing world. And Joey was out in Estonia. It wasn't the first time that he'd been there. Were you surprised that he actually went back to do it again?
No, not surprised, because, I mean, Joey raced for the love of racing. It wasn't for the money, you know, or he just did it because he loved it, you know. And he loved being out there amongst ordinary people, I suppose, as opposed to the glamour and the glitz that's involved even in British Championship now. When Joey had started, it was like long hair, dirty fingernails, greasy, you know, that type of look. And it worked for Joey because that's the way he was, you know, and everybody loved Joey for that there. You know, whereas I was able to do that because that era had come in by the time I'd started, you know.
You had to tell your mum. That must have been difficult.
Because of all the amount of miles that Joey had raced at high speed, and to lose his life on the smallest bike, the slowest bike, really, you know, it's very hard to fathom, you know. And the fact that Joey is so experienced, and I suppose we all thought that it would never happen to Joey, you know, you can accept it when it happens to somebody else, but not to Joey, you know. And I find that hard to come to terms with now, I must say. But, you know, what's happened, and I'm not glad, but in a way I can get comfort from the fact that Joey was killed off a bike, because I remember my brother Jim saying, at the time Mervyn Robinson was killed at the Northwest 200 at Martha's Cross, and he'd hit a school signpost, and Jim was saying, well, he's probably seen it coming, you know, and that really bugged Jim, you know. But whenever I fell off in the Isle of Man, even though in the video footage it shows me conscious, I don't remember anything about it. I could have been killed. I wouldn't have felt a thing. So I know that Joey didn't suffer at all, you know, which is comforting.
Were you surprised by the outpouring of sympathy? I mean, there was a massive funeral, and it wasn't just people from the north, from his local area. It was from all around the world, from the Republic of Ireland as well. Thousands of people turned up. Whereas you as a family... surprised by the outpouring of grief and sympathy that you got?
No, not surprised, I suppose. Humbled.
How did you cope with it after that then? You kept racing. I mean, up to last year you were still racing on the 125s in the Isle of Man.
I never thought about stopping racing, but I was a bit conscious of Would it be the right thing to do, you know? I was afraid that I was going to be disrespectful.
And did you get that sense from anybody else that perhaps you should call it a day at that stage?
Yeah. No, not really, because, I mean, my father was very supportive, so he says, if you don't want it to stop, don't stop. So. Sorry.
2004 kind of signalled the end of it for the time being. As we're sitting here at Mandela Park, you've got quite a huge brace on your leg. Are you going to come back to it? Is this the end for Robert Dunlop in terms of sitting on a bike and racing yourself?
Well, I don't know, John. I mean, this is a result of my 94 crash. My leg ended up 2 inches shorter, so I knew I was going to have to get it fixed at some stage, and I thought I could maybe get in just at the very end of the one season and have it ready for the beginning of the next season, but it didn't really work that way. And I've been putting off for 3 years now, so I just decided, well, I'll go and get it done now. And I don't know yet, honestly, I don't know. I have two boys racing, so.
Obviously, you can transfer a lot of knowledge of your bike career down to the two lads. How are they getting on, and do you have the same kind of fears perhaps that your father had for you that you have for them?
Well, I think it's good that youngsters should have something. And I mean, a lot of people says that to me about how can you let your boys race whenever look what happened to you and look what happened to Joe? But now I've got no qualms about it at all. I think it's good for them.
So your career just at a stalling point at the moment. I mean, obviously, hopefully get the leg sorted out, but we may see Robert Dunlop back on the bike sometime in the future.
Maybe. We'll see.
Robert Dunlop, thank you very much.
Pleasure's mine, John.
Next week on Ireland's Motorsport Legends, Eddie Jordan.
I believe that I wasn't good enough to be a driver per se, and also I chose it as a business and a career, which is a different way to, we'll say, the out-and-out sports person, the footballer or whatever. There's also a role for management, and there's a role, and I chose the management role. So from my point of view, winning in anything, particularly winning Grand Prix, is a very special moment.